Welcome to the podcast!
Come be part of the conversations that happen around my kitchen table.
He's John Branion, and he's been a stand-up comic for more than 30 years.
She's Amanda McKinney, and she's been my daughter for her whole life.
Our family believes laughter is a gift from God. We often discover it while discussing culture, faith, and family.
So go ahead and pull up a chair, neighbor. Can I call you Carl? There's plenty of room here for you.
Carl, it's a beautiful day. Beautiful day, Carl. Spring is coming into the horizon.
You are so eloquent.
Horizon is a car. Spring is coming in. Is the mole battle underway this year?
Yes, it is.
One kill.
Evasion.
I knew about the one kill, but I didn't know if that was an outlier or if the battle is fully underway.
That was an interesting one because I hunted him from within the house.
You told me you saw the ground moving from inside.
I just happened to look out the window and
so
saw him.
So if Carl didn't hear about the process for killing moles last summer, you might want to catch him up if he's not familiar.
It's pretty gruesome, Carl. Yeah. So if you have a weak stomach, you might want to maybe tune out for a 30
and avoid Luke's Facebook profile because he posted a picture.
Because he posts pictures of the carnage without trigger warnings.
I went a little ham on the last one.
Yeah, it was like Facebook has some automatic filters. If it's human, you know, blood, they can tell like the flesh color next to.
Right, but it cannot tell the difference between a mutilated mole and like a tuft of hair. And
yeah, it doesn't realize that mole was in, sad shape.
Yes. My old boss, who I haven't talked to in years, commented, gross.
Maybe she didn't know from last year that this is the right season when you need to be prepared to scroll quickly past his posts.
The technique that I learned from a guy, I think he calls himself the Mole Eliminator.
You know he does.
He's like,
don't say things.
Am I saying it right?
It's not like you've been idolizing this man for 3 years.
He is a Christian man and has put this technique out for the world for free.
Right.
Like the gospel. You will know, as soon as you hear the rest of this story, you will be able to deduce that he is, in fact, a believer.
Right. He's obviously filled with the Holy Spirit.
Okay, go ahead.
And his technique, as he has many videos available, is he will stamp down all of the runs in the yard. And then
those are mole trails.
The mole trails, yes.
Yeah.
Anybody who has moles knows what the runs look like. And then he will come back an hour or so later, quietly, and see if anything has popped back up. And then he will stare at said section for however long it takes
that
to see.
Like
to
a
see
fisherman the, watching a bobber.
Watching for, the movement.
Yeah.
Which once you see it once, you recognize it again and again. And once he does see that movement, he creeps up, and then he punches the run.
Behind the mole.
Actually, he punches in front and behind. And then as he's punching from behind, he reaches his fingertips and grabs the tail and pulls out the mole.
Mm-hmm. Live.
Alive and squiggling.
And you...
And I,
as a Christian man, he has.
I punch the ground, and then with my other hand, my knife wielding hand, I stab ferociously. And then.
Into the ground.
It wasn't a knife at first. The first time it was two screwdrivers.
Yeah, that was what I had. Yes.
A screwdriver
in front, and then he would sort of like he was tossing a salad. like multi stabs into the ground.
And once you get your first one, Carl, it's an addiction.
It's like it.
For some people. We'll just leave it there.
That first mole goes down.
I'm not going to lie. I would like to get one the correct way by reaching in barehanded.
Why don't you?
He's afraid of grabbing the mouth, right?
Well, afraid of grabbing the wrong end of the mole.
It's hard to tell which direction they're going.
They do bite.
Yeah.
I mean, of course they're not aggressive.
So would you.
They do have teeth. And I don't know. I just...
He doesn't
so much
want to
easier.
Let it get away. Like, mm-hmm. he's afraid of the...
Because once I, it's going to creep him out if he grabs it, and then it's going
to
get away.
Well, let's say I'm successful, and I pull it out. Now I have to kill something that I've looked in the eyes.
Is that what the Molinator does?
No, I think he just releases him.
I don't know what he does with the
Molinator. How could like that work? It's just going to go right back into the ground.
Well, I think he takes them far away.
He takes them to the yards that haven't paid him.
Because he's a Christian man. Because
he's a Christian man, right? I was just going to say yeah,
I don't know. It's easier to kill them if I don't have to look at them. I just stab the ground and then pull right. out the carcass.
Right. So you don't like to, you don't want to have to look him in the
I
eye.
I do
you
have
don't
a, I have a heart.
Spirit leave him.
I have a heart.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. But you've got one.
I have one.
You got one and you missed one.
And then with all the rain that we had yesterday, there was a very fresh run. Like the, you could tell the way the ground had broken up.
Yeah, well, you can tell.
And it wasn't dried out yet. And so I stared at that one for a while, but I never saw anything.
And so, basically, we have to look forward to now information about disc golf, information about oil changes, and information about the latest mole catch. Because
as I said last week, the oil change and automobile maintenance tips are helpful to people. And I yes. think you're out of line. When you scold Luke for talking about
hey, I was the one who said he should catch people up in case they hadn't heard that episode, because I recognize that not everybody is as burnt out on certain subjects as I
as
am.
As you are.
But yes, if this is your first ever Comedian Next Door, then you would be like, what is this
what are we
mole
talking
business?
About?
And yeah. now you know.
Mm-hmm. Why are they killing moles?
Yeah.
I even had a conversation with Mr. Mole Eliminator himself.
How?
Because he had posted something.
How much did you have to pay for that?
How much did that cost you?
And I posted a picture of the day that I got like two of them. So I was yeah. holding two of them. And I was like, hey, your technique works, thanks. And he was like, he was very encouraging.
Yes.
As you would imagine.
Did he share scripture with you?
He did not. I think he could tell. It's like, that looks like
from
a fellow.
From one Christian mole hunter to another.
There's a sort of a yes. there's a sort of a lingo.
It's an aura.
He's
yeah.
There's dirt. An energy.
We're both taking on these dirt demons for the Lord.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so yeah, there'll probably be some updates as the summer goes on. I am landscaping now. Mm-hmm. Well, not right now, but I've been landscaping, and I don't actually know what I'm doing, mm-hmm. but I think that.
We do have a disc golf update, actually.
We
today was
actually
not
do. Is it all right with you, Peaches, if we explain?
I'm outvoted. I'm outnumbered. I missed it.
Yeah, we had an ace, a hole in one, and it was very.
I don't know if that's coming background. Through.
Colin is trying to win video soccer, and it sounds like he's not right now.
He's up against Cristiano Ronaldo right now, and it doesn't sound like it's going very well.
No, I think within this chapter of the story, he's supposed to lose, if I know anything about video games. Right. So
can't win them all. So, what were we talking about? Oh, I'm doing some landscaping, and not really landscaping, just planting things, putting down the carpet, the cloth, and then the mulch over the top of it, and then we're planting stuff, and it's a lot of work. My gosh, it's so much work.
Which part of the house? The front?
Well, the goal is to not have to mow as much. And so it's a very utilitarian reason that I'm doing this. I don't.
You really know what's worse than mowing?
Weeding.
Weeding.
That's what you. That's what everybody is. Well, you know you're going to have to weed, and I know I'm going to have to weed. But I can pull the weeds out if I stay on top of it in less time than it's going to take me to mow all of those nooks and crannies. And so the goal is to plant something that's sort of a ground cover. And yes, I know I'm going to have to weed, but it won't be as much. I won't be mowing as often.
You sweet summer child. Weeding, there is no staying on top of weeding. It just.
Yep.
All right, well then I'm going to have a flower bed that I don't mow. It's full of weeds. Still going to be better than.
You'll be okay, I think, for a season since you put down the cloth stuff.
But right.
We'll see.
We will see.
unless you're planning to actually have a meadow in your backyard that you literally don't do anything with, or a forest, like people say, who have wooded, you know, acreage, that that actually is less maintenance, because literally, like, big old branches can fall down during storms and you don't even necessarily have to do a lot
about
it.
Well, maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll plant a forest.
That is the only way that you're going to not have to mow.
Maybe I will just grow timber.
All you're doing is making it harder for you to mow, which will always be a part of your life. The mowing is going to be there no matter what.
It's not going to be harder.
Yeah.
Unless you're planting trees in the middle of the yard that you got to mow around, which doesn't sound like what you're doing.
Well, there's already some stuff that I have to mow around, but I'm actually planning to come out further from those things so I'm not mowing underneath them and as close to them.
Uh-huh.
It seems to me like if you cut down on the amount of grass in your yard, you're going to mow less. That's the equation.
And you will mow grass less. But
right.
What Luke is saying is accurate. Like, it's not like you can just leave the whatever you do have untended. Even having a rock bed.
I know that. You see, now you sound like your mother, because she's always saying that too. You know, everybody's telling you you're going to have to mow, or you're going to have to weed. And I know that. It's nature.
But weeding
is worse.
It
doesn't
matter
what you do. It doesn't matter what you do.
Because you can't weed while sitting on a tractor, which is
mow while sitting on a tractor.
Well, that's true, but like,
you've seen his mower. It's the 1920 style.
Right, the push one.
Yeah,
but that's
I can't use that anymore.
Oh, you can't?
He doesn't have to use that. You can get a machine where you can sit and take care of the grass.
Why can't you use that anymore?
Seated.
It's because there's too much space to mow now.
Oh, I see.
When it was just my yard, then I could use that.
So you're not physically too limited to push the thing, or it's not broken. It's too much yard.
Mm-hmm. And I've got a self-propelled
mower. He's trying
mower.
To do less maintenance, which I can respect. I understand.
I'm trying to mow less. I think I'm saying this as clearly as I can.
Grass.
I want to mow less grass.
He hates grass specifically. He's cool with 4 hours of hands and knees.
No, it won't be that. It won't be 4 hours of tree. What do you guys think? How do you guys think plants work?
Well, we had a flower bed when we first moved in, and we eventually got to the point where we purposely ripped up all of those bushes and all of the, it was in the center of our yard. And so you'd think theoretically, that it was a pretty decent area. It was like, I don't know what, 10 feet by 10 feet or something like that. Maybe even a little more.
100 square feet.
And it's like, well, yeah, so that's, you know, that's a decent chunk that you don't have to mow.
Right.
Except no. Because
that's exactly right.
It looked awful because weeding would take longer than if we just rolled over it with a mower. And so it became less hassle and less time spent for us to mow over that area than to, yeah, try to spray / pull / you know, maintain with
I will
more
say,
precision.
It is difficult to get the grass under a trampoline.
Yes.
I am struggling.
Yes, that is true. But that's why,
I'm not planning to put another trampoline
in
the yard.
But even our rock bed, like, I love the idea of using rocks.
Right, but they sink.
They
and
sink
mulch,
and also
mulch just disappears. At the end of the year, you're like, where did my mulch go?
Mulch disappears.
Well, that's because you have moles.
Well, look, we put rocks out in our driveway, and I wanted that. It's a parking pad. I like it a lot. What does it look like this year? We did it last year. Paid a professional.
I haven't looked at it.
That was 2 years ago.
Does it
look
good?
Was it 2 years? Mm-hmm. I thought it was last year. Well, at any rate.
It's still in good shape.
It's got weeds in it. It's completely.
And I sprayed it twice.
And he sprayed it with weed killer.
Right, but the weeds are not. I mean, it's not. It doesn't look bad. Let's go look at it right now.
Luke's dad keeps commenting on all the weeds in our yard. People who care about weeds notice when they're there. And so,
Yeah, it's worse when your neighbors pay a lawn service and don't have any dandelions, because the contrast between those who don't.
Our neighbors are showing us up quite a bit, but they always
have. Our neighbors have always shown us up. They've got much better yards than we.
That's we have green-thumbed neighbors.
That's why I'm getting rid of the grass.
It's not going to work out.
We are raising humans.
Yes.
Yeah, not grass.
But like, we just realized that it gives you something to, like, it gives you something, a different way that you have to manage it. So you're still going to have to maintain
it. It's still it. Nature. It's but still it's, a living thing right. that's going to change and stuff. I understand that. I'm not dumb,
and so
you guys.
As far as maintenance goes,
I know
as much as mowing grow. Is a pain, mowing is still the easiest, fastest way to get done with your whole yard than like... than getting out all these tools and trying to sculpt or, you know, shape or whatever. Right, weed eating is that. The worst.
I think you need to dump a bunch of sand and do a Zen garden.
I'm just planting perennials.
Yeah, you could.
They'll grow in that,
and
too.
Weeds would grow up in
and
the middle
cats
of it.
Would enjoy
and
it.
Cats. Oh, yeah. All right. Well, regardless of what you guys
okay.
say, I'll update you.
It's okay. I... We know that you're going to have to experience it for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand. I mean, you are mowing two properties now.
Yes. And
that's a commitment.
Yeah. I still it don't still know what the footage is on it.
It still doesn't have as much. I don't have as much to mow as you do.
Right.
We have an acre, almost.
Yeah, I don't have that much.
And I have a 10-year-old. That helps.
Oh, yeah. Colin has started mowing.
Right. Well, mostly the goal is just to get rid of the little nooks and crannies. And that means... Mm-hmm.
The goal was to be crannyless.
I want to be crannyless. I want to be okay. sans cranny by the end of the year. And that means that there will be larger, longer strips of grass that come out from, like, buildings and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be perfect. And I'm going to be so happy when it's done. And I'm going to say to you guys, you should do as I do and simplify your mowing experience.
All righty.
Okie dokie.
All right.
All righty.
We will have that conversation in the future.
At the end of the summer.
Look forward to it.
This fall when I go, you know, I only mowed once this summer.
It's fine. If you don't have the context, if you don't have the experience, then you just need to get it first, and then it
I can
makes
see.
Sense. Yeah, then it all makes sense.
Then I'll
sense.
Understand.
It's like trying to describe a child's meltdown, which I've done for many people many different times. The only people
this
who really get it are the ones who have already seen it. It's just the way it is. Like, if you say to a person who has managed a meltdown before, oh, this is what they were doing, you can immediately see on their face if they get it because they're like, oh, yes, I've been there, or if they're horrified because they just
what?
Can't imagine.
So are you saying that I am like a child having a meltdown?
No, I'm not saying that.
You're saying that my gardening is childish?
I'm saying that...
I think we're supposed to find our joy in the Lord, John, and not try to take all the crannies out of life.
Not quite it either. I'm just saying, if you've never seen weeds spring up as quickly as they do.
What I'm saying is I have. It's like you guys act like I've never been outside before.
And everybody who has told me about their experience like with their children or whatever, they're like, I have children. I'm like, I do not doubt that. I'm only describing a meltdown and then testing to see how you respond.
I can't believe it.
And if you're like, yes, I've seen it.
And they're talking to me like, okay, outside, you're going to see this big light up in the sky.
All right.
It's the sun.
I used to describe
the
for
sun's
Luke
rays.
After a tough day at the daycare. This was before we had kids. I was working at a daycare for kids with special needs. And he would ask me, how was your day? And I would tell him, oh, it was kind of rough today. I mean, it could have been worse. It's pretty typical for the daycare. But, you know, a kid spilled milk on purpose and swore at me while he was doing it.
Right.
And Luke would be like, oh, so what do you do in that situation? And I'm like... It's hard to describe. It depends on what else is happening in the midst of that, you know, basically.
What I would do is put down mulch.
Right. You just add flowers to the mix, and then you don't have to get out the mower.
Right.
And so, but it became obvious to me. I would explain all of these different scenarios. You know, who knows what it was, but I'd explain to Luke, oh, we had, you know, a kid. One kid was crying because another one was pulling her hair, and you know, while at the same time this other kid needed a diaper change, and it was kind of chaotic, but at the same time, the worst part is when you're trying to work with another adult on it and they don't really know. They're not much help.
They don't know what to
And
do.
He's like nodding and he understands the words that are coming out of my mouth. It's not like I'm like, hey, Luke, do you know what a kid is? Do you know what a diaper is?
I get
You know,
it.
But I knew just back then, I was like, oh, wait a minute.
So you really think...
I can't
really
explain
think,
this to
I
you.
Like that you're explaining weeds to John, who has lived 20 years longer than you
I
have.
I know, and people are like, they're like, I know weeds, and I've seen diapers, and they are smelly sometimes.
Well, not it's not even yes, that. It's not even. I also know children in
meltdowns. We're not talking about, like... the reality of weeds, and we're talking about systems of managing them. And systems, there's an infinite number of ways that you can handle that scenario with the milk and the crying kid and the diaper. And you wouldn't even know all of the questions to ask unless you've actually tried like five or six systems of your own that haven't worked.
It doesn't matter. I've already decided I'm just going to plant trees back there. And so 10 years
shocked.
From now,
that
it's
could
going
work,
to
or
be
a pond.
It's going to be a dense forest.
I am shocked that Mandy was able to steer the conversations toward parenting.
I was intending to anyway.
I am shocked. My jaw is open.
I know, Carl,
if you say to me, oh my goodness, that would have been stressful because, you know.
You know, if you raise those weeds right, it won't be a problem.
If somebody responds to my story of woe with, oh, sympathies, it's really hard when a diaper stinks. I'm like, nope, that's not it. That's not what it is. That's not what makes it stressful. But only another person who's actually been in a similar situation could accurately say, here's what makes it the most stressful. And then you're speaking the same language and you both know that they really do get it.
All right. It's going to be a struggle because the weeds are going to come up in the yard no matter what I do.
Is that
what you wanted to hear?
Well, that is the case, but
yeah. Just prepare yourself for disappointment.
Just right.
Your optimism's a little too high.
Just prepare yourself to have to work more than you think you're going to. It's almost like it was part of the curse. It's almost like God himself decreed that this was going to be a lifelong battle of yours.
How I'm going to have to work the land.
You're not just going to be able to plant. What is it? What is that crawling, creeping?
Creeping time.
Creeping time. You can't.
Well, I can't plant that anywhere. Anywhere.
Well,
just anywhere. It has to have full sun.
From now on, the ground is going to work against you, and you're going to have to really force it to give you your food.
Unless
you plant creeping time. Then you will have short-circuited the whole thing. You will have...
Then the curse will fall away.
You will have bested the curse itself.
Yes. You will have circumvented this curse.
The real secret, my son Adam, is time.
Creeping time.
And I don't mean T-I-M-E.
No, T-H-Y-M-E. You can also eat it, too. So.
Epidurals and creeping time are how we defeat the curse.
2024 Ta-da. Is the year that we no longer have to toil.
No longer have to suffer mowing or giving birth.
Or changing diapers.
Or changing diapers.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry I brought it up. So
that's what I really wanted to hear.
When you come over to our house within the next decade or so, you're going to have to trudge through a dense forest.
that would actually possibly work. The only solution is to just give it up to...
It'll be like our neighbors. Our neighbor's house will be there with a perfectly manicured yard right next to it. Our jungle fortress.
Call it a wildlife reserve. A natural habitat.
Dense vines and vegetation. And
I don't know what you were going to talk about today.
I thought John said something interesting today.
Of course I did.
Okay, tell us, Ninja.
I don't remember exactly how it went, but the gist of it...
But I remember it
was I remember
good.
My eyebrows going up, intrigued-like.
I remember... This is an interesting thing.
I didn't file it away in the order it was said. It was more of a couple ones and zeros for me to recall.
Uh-huh.
But it was basically that people behave... in accordance to what they believe. Ooh, that was it. I nailed it.
Yeah, that was pretty close.
And that is true. That is true, because people say a lot of things, and then when something's actually on the line, it's like, okay, well, they're going to behave with what they believe, not what they say.
Right.
And I just feel like we have an epidemic of the lukewarm. And when it's tough, it reveals that there's actually not heat there.
Well, we had a conversation about John 4, Carl, which is the Samaritan woman at the well. And among the other things, the other lessons in John 4, there's the lesson that the woman went into town after she met Jesus and told the other townsfolk, told her friends and family, her peeps, hey, come and meet this guy who told me everything about myself. And there's a lot of Christian people that have supposedly met Jesus, quote unquote, but they don't do that. They don't bring people to Jesus. Instead, they go into town and they go, let's have coffee together. Let's have a relationship. Let's hang out. Let's get to know each other. Let's become friends. Let's form a relationship. And then I'll introduce you to Jesus, you know, after I've built up trust with you. And so that was kind of the topic.
Yeah, when you said she went into her friends and her peeps, my thought was actually she didn't have any of those. She was an outcast, which we all agree about. True. But somehow we still think the best way to evangelize is to have friends first.
And that's a good point. I didn't even think about that.
Apparently not, because she had no friends, couldn't even go to the well at the normal time.
She was all by herself at the well.
And so she clearly didn't think it was necessary. In fact, I would even argue it was probably more powerful having this woman who doesn't come around a lot showing up all of a sudden, all excited, kind of agitated, you know, hey, you got to come. Like, I know this is out of the ordinary. This is unusual for me.
I think they saw a real change in her.
Right.
Unexplainable change.
This is me in the middle of the town square. Usually I hide. Usually I try to avoid all of you people. I'm a hermit of sorts.
Because, you know, I've had five husbands.
Because I'm embarrassed. And we don't get along great, all of us.
Right. We're not really buddies.
But here, all of that doesn't matter right now because it's something important. The message itself now is something you need to hear, whether you consider yourself a friend of mine, and you probably don't, or not. Come with me and let me introduce you to this guy. I think he could be the Christ. And that took precedence over all of the social awkwardness that we agree was there. But somehow Americans miss this. Like somehow Americans are like, oh, no. She needs to first lay some groundwork and be friends with these
people. Find common ground.
Build the bridge and fix the relationships before she tries to introduce them to Jesus. It's like, actually, the fact that they weren't friends might have even helped a bit in this case. It's like it really helped. It helped kind of convey the message that she had something important to say.
So we're encouraging you to be outcasts.
Well, I'm encouraging
you to be socially
not outcast
rejected
because of your sin.
Right.
No, I'm encouraging you
by society
to not be friends with pagans, which is what we've been talking about quite a bit. Like you don't need. Not only do you not need to be friends, but when you let the pagans know that it's really important to you that you guys have a great relationship, then they can use that to their
leverage
advantage.
That.
Yeah. Versus when you spend most of your time kind of ignoring each other, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, this is an emergency situation. I suddenly need to tell you something. It's very important. It actually matters more, I think, and has a bigger impact than when you hang out and eat pizza and drink coffee and have this
lukewarm relationship. Why should I believe you? Convince me that I should go and meet this Jesus of yours. And it's like, I don't have time for that.
Right.
You know, if you don't want to go meet him, that's fine.
Fine, don't.
Yeah.
Moving on to the next one.
I don't think he even gave her his name in that whole story.
No.
She was just going around saying that the Messiah is.
Right. Well, that's what he called himself.
Yeah.
He told her his title. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was off to the races. She had an important message. She understood the assignment. And it was not to go quickly make friends in town. It was tell them about the Messiah.
Well, and somebody brought it up to the point that Luke was talking about. Somebody said that rather than spending our time trying to talk to atheists, you know, it would be better if we concentrated on these
marginal Christians, these people who already believe, these people already believe in Jesus, but they just don't, he kept saying, go to church.
Yeah.
You know, they just don't go to church. You know, they don't act on it, but they already believe it. And the point that I was trying to make is that, well, you don't really believe in Jesus if it doesn't affect your life. If you've shoved your faith and your belief, quote unquote, off into the side to where if somebody comes up to you and says, well, do you go to church? Oh, yeah, I go to church. I'm a Christian. But it doesn't have changed the way you behave, then it's not legitimate. And that's true. That's true for everybody. Everybody acts according to what they really believe, not what they say they believe.
I think it's easier for people to understand that concept if they have context with like real relationships in their actual lives. I think you can tell people who are talking theoretically versus those who are like conveying a type that they actually have met in person. And I think it's like, I'm going to say this again, but I can tell when a person's experience includes talking to quote atheists or talking to quote marginal Christians or whatever, when they start referring to them that way. And I'm like, oh, this is all paper stuff. Like, this is all stuff that you've worked out in a thought bubble, you know, in a web, what do you call this? Thought web. And you don't actually have experience. Like, you couldn't put a name to this. You couldn't give me one example of an actual person who fits that description, because it doesn't take very long of interacting with somebody who claims to be a Christian but also doesn't go to church for you to start going, now, wait a minute. What is the difference between this person and a person
and
who
a straight up atheist.
Both doesn't go to church and doesn't accept right. the Christ as the Messiah? Like, what is the difference?
And that conversation is a conversation that needs to be had often among Christian people, among people in your tribe, to find out, you know, what they do believe and why they do believe it.
Yeah.
And it's awkward conversation, because Christian people, especially, get offended when you quote unquote question their faith, or when you doubt that they're actually believers. Yeah. But when you ask them, like, I had a conversation with a lady years ago who was talking about how Paul was a sexist, you know, and Paul hated women, and Paul this and Paul that, and I don't like the things of Paul. And I'm like, okay, well, how? And this was back in my youthful days when I didn't know what was up yet, so I was in the process of learning how these dialogues work.
Which is fair.
Yeah,
and everyone needs to take the time to see that creeping time doesn't work before they will be able to come to the right conclusion about. Go ahead.
Right, I was. what I'm saying is,
you need that experience.
I am perfectly. I'm better versed to understand how to have this conversation now because I've had that conversation with her and then others right. like that. But she was saying, you know, Paul this and Paul that, and I was like, okay, well, how. How is it that you get to call yourself a Christian? What is Christianity to you if you're throwing out, you know, the majority of the New Testament, virtually all of the Old Testament? You know, the Old Testament was full of sexists as well, and right. slavery and animal sacrifices.
Who's there was really in charge
all
here?
Sorts of stuff, yeah, where there was like, so she would pick and choose the things that she liked in the scripture and throw out the others. And I was genuinely asking, again, because I was green and naive and didn't know how this conversation was supposed to go. And she said, she was offended. How dare you question my faith? That is a low blow. And I'm right. like, well, I'm questioning your faith because I don't understand how you could call yourself a Christian and throw out 75% of the Bible.
Was this on social media or face-to-face?
It was.
It sounds like it was on social
media. It was on social media, but this was a person who I did know. Oh, okay. This was a person who I had had multiple face-to-face interactions yeah. with. But this was happening over a, I think it was a private message. I don't even think it was public. But, yeah, there are people who get offended when you, quote, question their faith. But the fact is that we all need to be questioning our faith all the time, because you act according to what you actually believe. And so your actions are telling you
right.
what you believe.
And I do have a category for people. I know real life people who don't go to church regularly, but who can articulate the gospel and who I do think probably do believe it. But because their actions don't line up with, you know, the biblical mandate at this point, that needs to be part of the conversation you have with that person directly. And so I'm not saying that it doesn't exist or that there aren't people who are, you know, I guess legitimately saved, to use a Baptist term, and also maybe aren't going to school, to church for some reason. But I'm just saying, when I hear somebody bringing that up as an example, in like as an anecdote to like bolster their point that they're making, I can generally tell if they have a particular person in mind or if it's just some theoretical, you know, some hypothesis that they've got. Well, there could be people who maybe fit this bill and maybe their personality is similar to this over here. And it's like, maybe, but are we just writing a fiction story right now? Are we coming up with our own little, you know, character sketch, or is this practically applicable to real life relationships? And I think in the case, I think today, the two of you were giving examples from real life. Like, it was obvious that you were talking about people that, like, atheists that you've actually met, and also Christians who have fallen prey to those atheists.
Christians who love these atheists.
Yeah. And you were like talking brothers. About them both from a place of knowledge, and in many cases talking to people who did not have enough context to understand that conversation. And I, again, I'm not trying to blame them for that, because I genuinely do believe that there's only so much you can do if you haven't been given the experience. If God himself hasn't placed these people in your life, then yeah, you wouldn't know, you wouldn't understand what we're talking about. But I can tell when somebody's like, oh, this is a bit of truth that's going to be helpful in a very specific situation with my own loved ones,
right,
versus somebody who's like, I'm just kind of shooting the breeze here. I'm just kind of shooting from the hip to see.
Well, there's
if I can throw stuff on the wall and see what sticks.
The fact that Richard Dawkins has now confessed with his own mouth that he is a, quote, cultural Christian is profound. And it's the sort of thing that, yeah, unless you're...
You're going to say living under a rock.
Well, I'm not going to say living under a rock, because there are a fair number of Christians who don't living know who Richard Dawkins is.
It's most of them, I think, in our community.
Yeah, especially younger Christians, because this was like in the 90s. This was the mid-90s.
Right.
And so that was a long time ago. But he is, he's still an atheist, and he still doesn't believe in any of the Christian, he still doesn't believe in any of the Christian stuff, but he likes the Christian ethos.
Like the Christian God.
He likes the morality.
Yeah.
And he is like a lot of professing Christians.
Right. Well, that's my point.
That's the thing. Richard Dawkins and a lot of professing Christians have the same
You were
cultural
talking to people who don't know that they don't know the significance of what Richard Dawkins said. They don't know the significance of what he now believes versus what he claimed to believe a few years ago.
Right.
And they don't understand it because of what you just said. So many of them are actually just like him. And so that's kind of what I mean by not having the right experience or not having the right context. They're identifying as Christians, but really their understanding of Christianity itself is probably the same.
It's exactly as Richard Dawkins. Yeah,
it's utilitarian,
and it's how civilization runs better, and we want civilization to run better. And
I got that feeling, I wouldn't call it despair, but I sort of got that sinking, frustrated feeling that a teacher gets when there's this like important point that I want people to get, and it's like I suddenly realized
they're not going to get it.
Well, they're not capable. Like, right. Well, you were talking about that Jesus condescended to the woman at the well. He was talking down to her,
right,
and she was aware of it.
And that gave some people heartburn.
And she allowed it to happen. And right. My point that I was trying to make was, well, yeah, in our culture with, you know, American democracy and liberty, it's all about equality. We've
respect everybody.
Years trying to pretend like everybody is always on equal footing and completely demolishing any semblance of authority,
right,
in respect for somebody who's in authority.
And you condescend to somebody, it's always wrong. It's always wrong, right, and offensive to condescend to somebody.
Right. And we get that idea because we have just decided that equality in terms of everybody having the same amount of authority and everybody giving each other equal respect is good.
It's wrong to try to teach somebody anything because you're forcing your beliefs on them.
Well, that was the point I was trying to make, and I thought it made perfect sense. I thought this was a great example, because when I was in school, which was, you know, 15 and 20 years ago now, I noticed that there were kids in the class who had huge problems with teachers, and they would tell me, you know, you should watch out for this teacher when you get up to this grade level where I am, because this teacher's mean, they're unreasonable, they're constantly causing problems, it's just really bad, you're going to have a hard time. And I heard that from people both in high school and in college about teachers and professors, and in every single case, I would end up in that class and have a completely different experience than the people who tried to warn me.
This teacher's not that bad. And
I would notice like some of the qualities that the students found distasteful. Like mm-hmm. I would know what it was about that teacher that upset the student, but it wasn't because the teacher had a problem.
Right.
It was because the student had an authority problem.
Right.
So you'd have a professor who would come in and he would say, you know, listen, we'll get along just fine as long as you can follow directions. And here's your syllabus. It's got every assignment on it. Please do not come to me the day after and ask for an extension. You know in advance when all these papers are due, blah, 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 blah. You know, this is the format you should use.
That's so mean.
And people are like, what is his problem? Why does he have something crawling up his butt and dying? You know, and I'm like, he's in charge. He's literally telling you exactly how you can get an A+ in his class.
In simple terms.
And you're mad purely because you're not in charge. That's literally what the problem is here. And so that's the context that Americans are using versus the Samaritan woman who was used to being considered less
condescended
than.
Condescended to.
Was used to being condescended to. Yeah. Well, I thought that made perfect sense. It's a criticism of the United States as it currently stands with our huge authority problems.
It does.
And it just, apparently I was making no sense to the majority of the room.
People don't think they have people don't know how to recognize when they have an authority problem, because we are steeped in the idea that everybody, quote unquote, deserves respect. And by respect, that means agreement. There's no disagreement. There's no judgment. Negative judgment of any kind. And everything that you do is okie dokie. And it should be affirmed. And so when that's your context, when that's your entire, when that's the lens that you look at life through, when somebody comes along and disagrees with you, your lens says, oh, well, they're automatically the person that's wrong.
Right.
I'm not wrong, because I'm just as good. I'm just as smart. I know I'm worthy of the same respect that this person's worthy of. They don't realize that an authority problem is, it's easy to tell if you resent somebody trying to tell you something that you don't know.
Right.
If it gives you feelings of, if you have anger or resentment toward it, well, who does he think he is lecturing me? Well, it's like, what's wrong with being lectured? What is actually wrong with somebody lecturing me?
Yep.
Nothing. I mean, they may not know what they're talking about. They may be an idiot, and I'll figure that out as we go along. But there's nothing really wrong with somebody trying to teach me something.
Right. No.
No, John, that's called mansplaining.
Only if it's done by a man.
Most of the lectures are from women, in my experience. Men don't usually have much to say.
That's true.
We're literally being told now, as teachers and parents too, anybody who's in a place of authority, we're now being told by people who don't know what they're talking about that our job is to make the student or child want to.
Right.
That's literally what they think a teacher's authority is.
To create the desire.
You have been given this classroom, or you've been given this household, and your job is to be a slave to the child's or student's emotions. And if you walk in on the first day and you say, here are my expectations, and somebody has a negative reaction to that,
you're a bad teacher.
It's your fault. Because they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I'm like, oh, I saw that years ago and thought, this is going nowhere good.
This is not
going
to help people.
It's going nowhere good. And there are teachers. I sent an interview to my sisters this week. It was an interview between Tammy Peterson and a lady whose name escapes me, but she was like a 45-year veteran of the public school system or something. It's actually a really great interview. And I told my sisters, I just wanted to point out to all of you that I don't hate teachers. Like, this is an example of a public school teacher whose philosophy I wholeheartedly endorse. But she was talking about how her hands have been increasingly tied by school boards, politicians, younger teachers and parents who do not understand how authority is supposed to work and are not willing to admit that the problems their children are having at school are not related to their mental health. They're not related to needing a different personality to be at the front of the room. They're not related to having the wrong diet and they need to go gluten-free. The problem is that every single person who's ever been born has a sin nature. Everybody has an authority problem on some level.
Right.
Christians are the ones who recognize their own authority problem and then say, have mercy on me.
Ooh, yeah, I need to repent.
But if you don't have that perspective and you think there's something you can physically do from the outside to manipulate your child into being less of a sinner, you are going to constantly run into this problem over and over and over again. And this teacher was saying, you know, there's nothing that I can do if we're coming at this, we're approaching the problem from completely different perspectives. When you've got a kid who's struggling, whether it's a small seeming struggle or a very large meltdown, like I was describing before, and there's, you know, chairs being thrown, it comes down to challenging a person where they don't want to be challenged. And you don't back up at that moment. You don't back off and switch strategies because it's a clue that something is very, very wrong.
That was our son gone. Even I could hear that one.
Oh my goodness. I think it was actually more of a that was one of the happier noises.
Oh, was it?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Either. Dude.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a, I don't think that condescension is a negative thing. And that's what I tried to answer the question because the question came up. It's like, it sounds like you're saying that, you know, there were people that have a problem with the word condescension. And that's because our culture does not like to be condescended to. Mm-hmm. But it really just means coming down to another person's level for the sake of communicating something, bringing them up. And if you discover that you're talking over people's heads, then you have to condescend. You have to come down so that they will understand what you're talking about. And the only people who have a problem with that are people with an authority issue, people who feel insulted that they have something that they don't know, and you are going to tell them what it is.
I think an authority issue is more of a modern phrasing of what is just pride.
If we're going to
go back to the true root of things.
Right.
Yeah, if you want to use the Bible word.
Self-importance.
Which I do.
Pride will work.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I think I've commented before that one of the things that I've learned in my conversations with the quote-unquote atheists, and I think, first of all, I think I'm going to stop making that distinction. I think moving forward, I'm just going to try to talk about people and what they believe and what they think and forego the label of Christian and atheist because they're basically identical now.
Ooh, what are we going to use instead?
I don't know.
Because you've already said that you don't believe atheists actually exist.
Christians or atheists. Yeah. Or he tried to ask AI to come up with a name. And you know what it came up with 5 seconds after I came up with it? What?
Universalist.
I was like, it's really the Universalist Church that we're describing here. Let's all come together and prioritize like feelings and discussion above actually landing on.
Yeah. So I might do that. I might just default to Universalist.
You could just call them Lukes for lukewarm.
Well, then what the hell? That's your name.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Instead of atheists, we'll call him Luke.
Okay, well, is that it then?
I thought I was going to make a point. I don't remember what it is now, so I guess that'll do. I got to go and plan some creeping time.
Bye, Carl.
Thanks for visiting the Comedian's House. If you want to spend more time with our family, you can follow John Branion on YouTube and Facebook. Also, email nextdoor@johnbranion.com with your comments and questions. We'll see you next time.